forget to take my mask off. I have been asked to preach more about the end days, the last times, in the last 12 months than I have in my previous 50 years of preaching. That to me astounds me, that we are focusing our attention very much on the end time. What's going to happen? When is it going to be? How are we going to be ready for it? And I think in our generation right now, there are a number of contributing factors that are saying to us, look, the end times are not far away. The first one is COVID-19. If we look, it's been 19 months that we have been under restrictions. We haven't been able to meet together in a real way except for a brief time in the summer. We have to look and say, are we allowed this event under the new rules? How are we going to celebrate Christmas? Was the question we had last year. And it seems to me that this is grinding on and on and on with no end. If you're waiting for hip or knee surgery, you're going to be waiting a long time. They've all been delayed. If you're waiting for cataract surgery, you're going to be waiting a long time. This has impacted our whole lives. And not surprising, it started to impact churches. In the United States, there are groups of people asking, would Jesus be vaccinated? And when I first heard that, I was a little astounded. But I know in the small group that I go to, we are strongly divided by people who are pro-vaccine and people who are anti-vaccine. So much so that we think our small group may split apart. No, I'm not kidding. I can see it splitting churches. I can see it being people coming and saying, oh, is your church, how do you handle it? Do you have a little sign that in the entranceway that says, sinners and unvaccinated this way, vaccinated and saints this way? And I think it's starting to get into the fabric of our being. When will this thing end? The second one, I think we've been impacted by climate change is the new word. In a farming community, you know that the crops this year are not as good as they have been. By the way, you had record crops the last 2 years, so don't compare it with that. So, not quality. So you have temperatures above 35 degrees Celsius for many days. It has been the hottest summer in record in Alberta. Even the leader of the opposition said, I have not seen a three-day rain like I did when I was a kid. Three-day rains have disappeared. And on top of that, with the temperature, we see different things happening in other parts of the world. In New York, they had over 3 inches of rain in 1 hour. It flooded the subways. People couldn't go home by train. They had to walk home through the water. We look at in Germany this year, there were floods, destroyed a lot of homes. And even now in the Canary Islands, there is a huge volcano that may well destroy that island. And we look and say, this is climate change. It's changing how we live. It's changing how we do. Is this the end time? And after living through the summer of 37 degrees, And I look and say, yeah, the earth is going to melt with a fervent heat, but maybe not quite now. The third issue I think that people is really affecting people is the breakdown in social structures. It's huge. In Edmonton, a nurse was punched as she left work in the face because she was working at the hospital, she was a nurse, and this person that punched her was an anti-vaxxer. Now, much as I don't like Justin Trudeau, I will admit that right out, throwing gravel at him is not something that I would have associated with a political campaign. But it's happened. Gravel was thrown at him. And so security had to be increased. If we look at the rhetoric that went on in our election, it's substantial. It's rough. If we look at provincial politics, everyone's got the gloves off for Jason Kenney. It doesn't matter what he says, what he does, he's in trouble. And there's this huge breakdown of social fabric. So these three causes have said, are we near the end? Are we living in the end days and living in the end times? Now, I don't want to be skeptical, but Martin Luther in the early 1500s thought he was in the end days. There was wars. There was huge fighting going on. There was huge social disruption going on. And Luther thought, honestly, that he was in the last days. Luther was the great Christian reformer. Now, we're 500 years on from that, and some of the conditions that caused Luther to think that he was in the last times are the ones that we are seeing today. So this thought that we are in the last times is not new. In 1918, 1919, there was the end of the Great War, in which millions of people were killed. And following that, there was the Spanish flu, in which even more people were killed. And so the question came up in 1919, 100 years ago. Are we in the last days? Are we in the last times? And that's a legitimate question, given the circumstances in which we find ourselves. So let me answer what I feel, okay? So I'm sure you'd be very surprised if one night, around 9 o'clock, you got a phone call that went like this. Hi, I'm Bill. I'm your local friendly burglar. I'm going to come to your house at 2 o'clock this morning, and I'm going to take some things from you, and please have coffee ready for me so that, you know, you welcome me into your house. How silly, how absurd. Because you don't know when a thief is coming. You may be able to prepare for it by putting deadbolts on, by putting an alarm system on, but you never know when the thief is going to come. So Peter writes and says, we don't know when the end times are going to come. It's like a thief in the night. We don't know when it's going to happen. But, he says, even though we don't know when it's going to happen, we should be prepared for it. And he gives us three ways of being prepared. The first is by being forewarned, and that's towards the end of the chapter. The second one is looking and saying, if this is going to happen, what sort of people do we need to be now? And thirdly, in this new world, this new heaven, this new earth, what are the sort of people that are going to inhabit it? What are the characteristics of the people that will inhabit the new heaven and the new earth? So this is Peter's read on the end times under the direction of the Holy Spirit. The earth and the heavens as we know it will be destroyed. And a new heaven and a new earth will come about. And in this new heaven and new earth, there is righteousness. That is right living, right standards. Right now, we live in a society in which standards seem to be declining. Laws seem to be, well, you know, as long as you feel good about it, that's fine. We're living in a society which has no right, no wrong, no sin, no good. But in this new kingdom, this kingdom that will come around, in the heavens and new earth, there is righteousness. That is right living, right standing with God. So let's talk about the three things Peter talks to us about. He says, you are forewarned. And because you are forewarned, there are several things you should do. Number one, be on your guard. Number two, you should grow as a Christian. So when the Japanese invaded Pearl Harbor, they obviously didn't tell the Americans they were coming. But the Americans were, there was some indication that something was going on. And in a tribunal held after the incidents in Pearl Harbor, the American military said, if we would have been forewarned, we would have been prepared for it. And then little stories came out that a radar operator had seen a lot of dots on his screen and had phoned and said, I don't know where it is, but there's a lot of dots coming towards us on my screen. To which his boss replied, you've had a long shift. Go home, have a good breakfast, and go to bed. There was forewarning, but they ignored it. So today, when Peter says we be forewarned, there are a couple of things we can do. The first thing we can do is ignore it. Oh, that's down the road. That's not for me. I couldn't care less. Or the other way is to say, look, this very much involves me. And so I'm going to take note of what Peter says. So he says two things we need to do. The first is to stand firm. And I would suggest that in our society, that's a real problem. For every person, three people, that make a confession of faith in Jesus Christ, who have an experience in which they give their heart to Jesus, one in three will call it quits in the Christian life and will not go on. That's 33%. And I think the number is higher. People do not continue in the Christian faith for all kinds of reasons. And so they call it quits. Now, the second problem is people join the Christian faith. They fully believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died for them on the cross, and that he rose from the dead. But, they have problems seeing how it relates to them and their busy lives. They're taking their children to dance. They're taking their children to music. They're taking their children to this. Oh, there are crops on my million-acre farm that I have to look after. There's seeding to do. There's harrowing to do. There's fertilizing to do. There's weeding to do. There's gathering the stuff in at the end, and our lives are just busy, 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 busy. And in that busyness, the evil one comes along and says, you know what? Don't worry about going to church. That's only one sermon. It's only Trevor preaching. You can give a skip to that. And in our busy lives, we tend to drift away from the Christian faith. And I would suggest to you it's a very real problem today. In the middle of our busy lives, we drift away from the Christian life. And there are a number of scriptural references to drifting away. It's not something we intend to do. It just happens. And so we need to stand firm. This is where we're going to go on Sunday. This is what we are going to do at home. This is where I'm going to stand in the way I do my business. So we need to stand firm. Now, the second part of this is growing in grace and in the knowledge of God. Now, I don't know in your house if you had the same sort of thing as we had. Well, on the doorpost, we would put our children up against the doorpost, and on every birthday, we would draw a line across their head that went onto the doorpost. Okay? So, you know, if you have five kids, that becomes a problem, which is doing it. So one family I know had different colors. So the first one was red and blue and so on. Some people would put a letter at the end of it so that this is the height of David D. on a certain day. So I can tell you how my children are going physically. Well, one of the nicest things I saw someone do was that in this house of six kids, they had a door frame that had the markings for all their kids. And they were leaving that house and going to a smaller house. And the contractor or the builder or took that door frame out and put it in the new house so that they would be able to remember their kids and their growth. But you see, I can't do that. I can't take you to that doorpost over there and saying, this is where you are on this date in grace. You're at 10 units of grace. I can't take you 10 years down the road and say, oh, you're at 15 units of grace. I can't do that because there is no such thing. So how do I know, and how do you know that you're growing in grace? You're certainly not in physical stature, it doesn't show. So how do you know when you grow in grace? And by the way, what is grace? When was the last time you used the word grace in a non-church setting? I suspect it's never. Grace is not a word we use in our everyday vocabulary. It just isn't there. But at the time Peter wrote, it was completely different. When you met someone in the street, you didn't say, hello, how are you? Isn't the weather awful? When you met somebody, you said, grace. It was the common form of greeting in the times of the New Testament. And what it meant was, I hope things are going well with you. I hope things are going well with you. And so as we grow in grace, we grow in things that go well for us. Our Christian life is growing. It may be challenged, but we grow in grace. Now, the second meaning of the word grace, Paul has some trouble, physical trouble. We suspect it may have been with his eyes. And he went to God and said, God, remove this barrier from me. Take this thorn away from me. And God comes back and says, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. Now, the word grace there means my strength, my ability to get through this. So when Peter says, grow in grace, he asks for us to know God's power within our lives. God's power that can overcome adversity and difficulty. So that's number two meaning of grace. The third meaning behind the word grace is a passage found in Corinthians. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, And grace there means unlimited love. Jesus died, God came to earth, died, went to a cross. Why? Because he had grace. He had unlimited love for you and me. So let's put this into this context. Grow in the love of other people. Grow in the love you have for your neighbors, for the people around about you, the people who you go to work with. Grow in love. So when Paul says grow in grace, what he's saying is, listen, grow in love for other people. Grow in God's strength, not your own. So the next one. Not only are you asked to grow in grace, but you are asked to grow in the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Now, I can't give you an exam every year that says, okay, how much do you know about Jesus this year? Tick all the boxes. And if you get 100%, great. You've grown in the Christian life. And the next year I make it a little tougher, and you get 100% again. Are you growing in the knowledge of Jesus Christ? That's not what it means at all. Be very careful. It doesn't ask us to grow in knowledge about Jesus Christ. It asks us to grow in the knowledge of Jesus Christ. That is, you come to know him as a person, as a friend, as someone who you worship and adore. And you may not know how many blind people Jesus healed. It was his favorite thing, a group of people to heal. You may not know how many sermons he preached. And what was the idea behind his preaching? You may not know about Jesus. That's not what Peter is asking us to do. He wants us to know of Jesus. He wants us to know the kind of love that he shows us. In fact, almost the nearest one is being married. And you don't need to know about your wife, but you need to know of your wife. You need to know to read the signs that says, listen, guy, you better back off. Listen, guy, you better listen to what she's saying. Why do you get that feeling? Because you know of your wife. You know and can read the signs. That's the same idea that Peter says here. Know of Jesus Christ. Now let's go back and look at the first part that says, what sort of people should we be? Let's take a look at the challenge. The challenge of the Lord coming soon, the end of the world. And Peter says you need to be two things. First of all, you need to be holy and you need to be godly. Now holy is another word we only use in a Christian context, in church. We don't talk to our neighbors and said, how holy are you? No. It's not a word we use. But that's not the idea behind the Bible, biblical word, holy. Holy means set apart for a purpose. So let me give you an example. I understand you have a fireman here. Well, the vehicle that he drives is a holy vehicle. It's holy in that it only has one purpose, and that's to pick up, that's to go and put out fires. Now, there may be a second purpose, that's going to the Tim Horton and getting the donuts, but its main purpose is to put out fires. It is a holy vehicle. And it is holy because it is dedicated to the purpose of putting out fires. Now, Peter asks us to live holy lives. Does that mean we go around with a little halo on our top of our head? Does it mean we go around with a pious attitude that says, oh, this, that? Isn't it good you love the Lord? Isn't this good? Da, 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 da. And that's not what is meant by living holy. By living holy, it means that everything you do is set apart for God. So when you go to work, I know there is a man who signs your check every week, every 2 weeks, every month. But he's not the one you're working for. When you are a Christian, you have a new director. You have a new boss. And Paul says, listen, when we work for Jesus Christ. He is our boss. How much difference would that be in the way we go about a business? How much different would it be in the way we teach? In the way we work in the store? In the way we work in the bank? Recognizing that when we work for Jesus. I'm sure it would really affect the way we live. So that's the first thing. Listen, this is coming. Be prepared. Live a holy life. A life dedicated to God. A life that every part of your life is infiltrated by living for God. Now the second one, that word is godly. And again, we don't use the word godly other than in church. So what godly means is that we live at the standard that God has set. That's what a godly life is. So if we read through the Ten Commandments, and let's miss out the first four for a moment. Do not kill. Oh, that's easy. Do not commit adultery. That's easy. Do not steal. Oh, that's easy. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. I don't tell lies. Don't ever covet your neighbor's house, his wife, his farm equipment, the laborers on his field. Don't do that. In relatively simple terms, we look and say they're fairly straightforward to understand. But it's the first four we have the trouble with. Love the Lord your God with all your soul, with all your heart, with all your mind. That's the summary. That if we are to live godly lives, we have to show love for God in the way we live our lives. And the way we live our lives is following what he says. Godly lives are lives that please God. Now, we live in a society, and I'll be very honest with you, that has no respect for God. In fact, if God says something, well, let's do the opposite, because they have no regard for God. And I would suggest to you that's not the Christian way of doing things. The Christian purpose looks and says, I am a Christian, and therefore I have to live like God would want me to do here on earth. Now, I'm going to tell you that's going to bring you into conflict on many levels. It's not going to be easy for you to do that because the world, the people around you, want to squeeze you into their own image. They want you to be like them because they're terrified of you being different by being a Christian. And so when we live holy and godly lives, we look and say, yes, the end times are coming. The earth is going to be destroyed by fire, and so is heaven, the heavens. This is the sort of person I need to be. Now, the last one. In this new world, there is a new heaven, and there is a new earth in which dwells righteousness. And in that new heaven and the new earth in which derives righteousness, there are a few things that start out. We need to live lives that are clean. We need to live lives that are honest. We need to live lives that are pure. Because in this new heaven and new earth, with its standard of righteousness, we need to prepare to live for that. So the take-home message today is, listen, guys, here's a heads up. The world will come to an end. The earth will be destroyed. The heaven will be destroyed by fire. I don't know when. But what I do know is that even if I don't know when it's to come, I am to live my life in the fact that the end day is coming. And that I am to live a holy, godly life, that I am to grow in grace and in the knowledge of God. I am to stand firm in my Christian life against everything that comes against it. And to be very honest with you, I'm not so worried about the chronology of the last time. I'm more worried about the challenge of the new times, the last times. Because we spend all our effort and energy looking and saying, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? What's going to happen first? That's of no interest to me. What is the interest is, when you know it is coming, and we know it will happen, you change your style of life. You live lives that honor God. And so that's my take-home message. Don't worry about the chronology. Worry about the challenges. They'll be big enough. Okay, now, are we going to sing a hymn at the end, or we just want me to pray and close the service?